Chapter 2. Andrew reached King's Cross on the following Wednesday morning. It was the first time he had set foot in England, and he naturally thought of Bannockburn. He left his box in the cloakroom, and finding his way into Bloomsbury, took a bedroom at the top of a house in Bernard Street. Then he returned for his box, carried it on his back to his lodgings, and went out to buy a straw hat. It had not struck him to be lonely. He bought 2 pork pies in an eating-house in Gray's Inn Road and set out for Harley Street, looking at London on the way. Mr. Gladstone was at home, but all his private secretaryships were already filled. Andrew was not greatly disappointed, though he was too polite to say so. In politics he was a granite-headed radical, and on several questions, such as the church and free education, the two men were hopelessly at variance. Mr. Chamberlain was the man with whom, on the whole, he believed it would be best to work. But Mr. Chamberlain could not even see him. Looking back to this time, it's impossible not to speculate upon how things might have turned out had the Radical Party taken Andrew to them in his day of devotion to their cause. This is the saddest spectacle in life, a brave young man's first meeting with the world. How rapidly the milk turns to gall. For the cruelest of his acts, the vivisectionist has not even the excuse that science benefits. Here was a young Scotchman, able, pure, of noble ambition, and a first medalist in metaphysics. Genius was written on his brow. He may have written it himself, but it was there. He offered to take £1 a week less than any other secretary in London. Not a cabinet minister would have him. Lord Randolph Churchill would not speak to him. He had 58 testimonials with him. They would neither read nor listen to them. He could not fasten a quarrel on London, for it never recognised his existence. What a commentary on our vaunted political life! Andrew tried the press. He sent one of the finest things that was ever written on the ontology of being to paper after paper, and it was never used. He threatened the Times with legal proceedings if it did not return the manuscript. The Standard sent him somebody else's manuscript and seemed to think it would do as well. In a fortnight, his enthusiasm had been bled to death. His testimonials were his comfort and his curse. He would have committed suicide without them, but they kept him out of situations.